Welcome to The Thoughtful Entrepreneur. You asked for it, so we made it happen. Every Friday, we're doing something a little different. Instead of one long conversation, we're packing in four of them. Four experts, four big ideas, all in about the same time it takes to drink your morning coffee. We call it One Big Idea Friday, and the format is simple. I ask each guest one question, and they bring their single best idea for business leaders who want to grow without the noise. No fluff, no rambling, just the thing they actually want you to remember. I'm Josh Helledge. Let's get into it. With our next One Big Idea, it's Dimitri Papazisis. Dimitri, you are the co-founder and CEO of Superbow AI. You're found on the web at superbow.ai. Well, Dimitri, it's wonderful to have you. You're normally based in Dubai. I would love to hear, as would our audience, your one big idea.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a peculiar time for Dubai right now, but well, here we go. Business never stops in Dubai, and business never stops around the world. So here we go. So the big idea I believe is this, that in enterprise AI, how smart and intelligence is no longer the bottleneck, but execution is really the bottleneck. So models can already produce very impressive output. But again, the large enterprises do not buy output, they really buy outcomes. So outcomes only happen when AI can really operate safely inside real systems with governance, with traceability and human accountability built in. So that is especially true in highly regulated environments where they got all these sensitive data and systems are fragmented or old or data is scattered and sovereignty really matters. So in those environments, AI has to do more than sound smart, right? So it has to really act responsibly, explain itself, provide evidence packs. So we've got to preserve evidence and know when to stop and hand over to a human, which is human in the loop. So that is the shift we are building for at Superbow, and which is basically from model output to governed action. And I think that is where the real enterprise AI winners will eventually emerge. So not from who has the most spectacular demo, but from who can actually make AI trusted enough to execute inside the enterprise. That's the idea here.
I love it. Now, Dimitri, if I could ask, so your website is Superbow. Your tagline is Brain Unleashed. And so you actually do this work. Do you mind just sharing just briefly what it is that you do for your clients?
So we solve real problems, right? So we're not selling tech. So when we have some time to present to the client, we go with a very specific use case that we feel is relevant for them. So for example, in a leasing company, if you want to lease cars, we go with a specific use case that we solve something, for example, customer support, or in very large enterprises that they have thousands of employees, we go with a use case or a workflow for HR. And these are agentic for us. There is also a very, Josh, a very big misunderstanding of what AI agents are and what agentic AI is. It's not the same thing, right? So this is, it's true. It's not the same thing. AI agent is one agent. It's like having one employee with one skill doing one task, period. Agentic AI, it's a system. It's a system of agents communicating with each other in order to produce a specific goal. So an AI agent is, and I know maybe it's the first time that you listen, you hear that about, it's probably the elephant in the room that nobody really touches, and they say, we do AI agents, which is agentic AI. Well, got news for you, it's not. AI agent is a single unit, it's task-based, it's reactive, it needs instructions, and it has a very short-lived execution. On the other hand, agentic AI is a system of agents. They're goal-based, they are proactive, they can plan independently, and there is a continuous execution loop. So if you had to map that, it's like an agent is one employee, but agentic AI is a full company with processes, with autonomy and roles. So it's a very big difference. So when we approach a prospect client, we try to solve something that has value for them. So we just then, we don't even pitch with a deck. We need some time and we go with a simulation what in order to help them visualize how a solved problem looks like on the screen. And I think this helps a lot for prospect clients to understand, although to be very honest, we are in the pre-inflection market. So there is no adoption high right now in the market. Actually, we live in the adoption death valley right now. So the inflection is about to come. Nobody knows when, but we all know it will come for sure. So in the post-inflection market, the discussion will be different. Right now, it's a pre-inflection market. So here we are. And it's a pre-inflection market, and that's why it's the natural habitat of experimentation, right? So you get a lot of experiments going on and proof of concepts and pilots, but no one is really doing that from a productive full-scale production. Now, we got lucky and we had some large enterprises that we got the opportunity to actually go in full production. So we come from that. This is where we're coming from, not from theory.
Yeah. Well, Dimitri Papazisis, your website is superbow.ai. Very quickly, when somebody goes to your website and, about 15 seconds or so, what we have left, what would you recommend people do?
Well, send us a message, or they can even email me directly, or they can send us a message through our website. We have a very big sales team. They're gonna take over, and we're gonna, respond very, very fast, and arrange a meeting to explore how we could help.
Enterprise Agentic Solutions is at superbow.ai. Dimitri Papazisis, it's been great having you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh.
And with our next one big idea, it's Dimitri Lausch. Dimitri, you are a startup angel investor and you are the co-founder of Perfect.life. You are found on the web at perfect.live.com. Dimitri, it's great to have you. Please share with us your one big idea.
Yeah, I think the main big idea is that every business was built before for human, and now AI agents come instead. So basically, how to be ready and be visible for AI agents.
Well, tell us more.
Yeah, so you see, let's say currently we already in a third wave. So first it was, let's say, internet. Second was, let's say, mobile. And now basically AI, what's the meaning of it? So it's very important to be in a Google search before, but now it's very important to be, let's say, in agents optimizations. So it's Google optimizations and agents optimizations. So basically it means that you have to build your business and visible be, to business to normal AI agents. To build the MCP servers, to build, let's say, web pages without bot blocking and so on. And through that part, basically, you can get and generate additional revenue. And we understand that, let's say, ChatGPT already have a billion of users. And we see all the examples worldwide. So Shopify example, when you can buy basically, with one click, every stuff what provide Shopify. Next thing is at Walmart. So basically, with a Walmart, you can buy in US with ChatGPT different things, and that means that they are coming over there. And we see already that Amazon is pretty afraid and think, do they need to be integrated in ChatGPT? Or they have to build something else, yeah. So this is the case for a big, even companies where they have to be afraid, and for sure, I believe that they will come to different AI systems to be visible. And for business, as I'm currently, let's say, holding a concierge service business, and it's fully, let's say, with people. And let's say we build that website, web pages, then we provide it is with app, and now we think how our clients can communicate with us through the agents. So this is the case that when you have your agents on your PC or private server, so you do assignments for them and they do the job. But the biggest problem here is hallucinations, what happening with different AI models. Some examples, what we basically, a few years ago, we already implemented different AI models and on a front end. And then we've seen different things when basically AI provide you, let's say you want to get a paddle court and they provide you a tennis court. Yeah, which is maybe paddle court is not existed there. Or they can provide you a restaurant with which maybe 2 years ago closed. Or maybe they today not opened at all. So basically, AI they provide nice, fast information, but it must be checked by real people. So what it means? It means that on some stage, people or managers or owners of the company, they have to be like an orchestrator. Yeah. So basically, they have to manage AI on different stuff, and then let's say control what they're doing, or implement any system approach where their managers or employees will check it. But overall, you can do, let's say, I don't know, maybe one person can do 10 times, 20 times things more than it was before. So I'm personally already holding around 7 servers with AI agents. I have 5, let's say, Mac Mini and studios overall, and I have around 30 different agents. So all of them working, building new products, checking, let's say, employees, talking with employees on Slack and Telegram. So they provide and send some emails and so on. But on every step, you have to control them. Otherwise, let's say, we've seen different stories about, let's say, guys from big companies where emails were deleted or they spammed a lot. So this is the case where we have to be ready. And it's interesting that I think some advice to normal physical business is to be expert in this business, because overall AI can do a lot on stuff with automatization. But physically, let's say, why I choose the travel business, because basically hotel, it's a physical place where you have to come and leave the area, and you have to be transferred by car with a driver, or somebody will meet you on a spot like on Maldives or something like that. That's why this space will be always, let's say, arranged by people. And for sure, a lot of businesses and businessmen, they have physical business, what you can connect with AI, but still AI need to be connected with you. This is, let's say, a very important part.
It's quite a dance. Dimitri, tell me about Perfect.live. We have about 30 seconds left. Tell me who you serve. And again, it looks as though you primarily provide concierge services.
Yes, so overall, let's say we serve high net individuals privately, and we did integration for businesses. So basically, we provide a white label solution for banking, for fintech industry, for every industry what need, let's say, introducing of concierge or integration of concierge services inside their businesses for premium segment.
And your website is perfect.live. And when somebody
Yeah,
goes there,
exactly.
what would you recommend? That there's a get in touch button. What do you what's the next step to enter the club?
So basically, to enter the club, you have to try the service, and then let's say move forward, because what we help, so we save time first of all. So we do the biggest job on our side, and you can focus on your job. So this is most important what we do. So basically we have a solution for different problems, and we manage the whole travel activity.
Excellent. Dimitri Lauche, again, you're the co-founder of Perfect.live, found on the web at Perfect.live. Dimitri, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
With us right now, with our next one big idea, is Evan Chi. Evan, you are the founder CEO of Regenesis.io. You're found on the web at Regenesis.io. Evan, thank you for joining us. I would love to hear your one big idea.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh. And look, the one big idea is this, and that's that as content becomes more abundant, attention becomes a more and more scarce resource. So why is that important, and what does that really mean? Well, it means a couple of things, right? So in order to achieve that awareness, what that means is truth does not necessarily need to be the tool. Because the path to awareness is engagement. And for creators to garner more engagement, that means that they are going to be doing things like sparking outrage, stoking fear, because those are the things that create more engagement, right? So unfortunately, these content creators are incentivized to polarize people, to, talk about very controversial subjects, et cetera, et cetera. So, and so that's really important, kind of, for the future of content. And so, how did we get here, and why? What does that mean for our futures? It's really kind of the culmination of three things, how we got here, right? And so, the first of those is the creator economy, right? Or influencer marketing, where there's an entire generation of people who, they're able to go out and generate revenue, earn a living, using a piece of equipment that they already probably own, and sometimes talking about things that they're already doing, the meals they're eating, the places that they're traveling to. And so there's an entire generation of people out there that says, well, gee, well, through content, I can actually make a living, right? So that's definitely one of the drivers for this kind of like influx of content, right? The second is the kind of transition from UGC to EGC. Right. And so UGC is that user-generated content, just, the creator economy. And it's kind of evolving now into what we call EGC. Right. And so EGC is employee-generated content. So the brands, the companies, they are catching on, and they're saying, well, social media is this large untapped resource. And so more and more of them are incentivizing their employees to go out and create content, and to engage and to share with company content, because that ultimately is a false multiplier for that brand awareness, right? And so the third main contributor to all of this is AI, obviously, right? And so now we kind of all have the ability to go create content at scale very, very, very easily. So for example, I can go to any chatbot today, and with just a few prompts, I can create a year's worth of content at little to no cost in just under a few minutes, right? And so if you think of these kind of three things kind of coming together and culminating into this term that we hear a lot, AI slop. This content that we're getting tons of today, just a year ago, it would have been considered good content. It would have taken considerable resources to create, to think about, and to execute, right? But today it can be done at the push of a button. So really, that bar for our attention is really being set much, much, much higher. So why does that matter, and why is that important to us? Well, like I said, the path to awareness is through engagement. And unfortunately, the easiest way to get engagement is, again, through fear, outrage, controversy, fake news. And so most of these creators are really going to be incentivized to put that kind of content out in front of us. Okay. So, what does that mean for the future, and what does that really look like? It means that a lot of attention will probably be harnessed or siloed into a few brands. And we're kind of seeing this today, like Mr. Beast, where he has an intense following across many demographics, across many different languages. Second is that, there's going to be less and less trust because there's so much fakery out there, and it's so hard to tell what's fake from what's real, that trust is really, really going to erode. And so that means another thing. That means that trust is really going to be more and more important when it comes to content, right? And so finding those voices that we do trust is going to be important. And those people will be trustworthy because they understand the psychology behind the content. Okay. And so lastly, what does this really mean for you and me going into the future? Really, what it means is that if I am not actively shaping my brand narrative, if I'm not telling the algorithm what I'm interested in, who I'm all about, then the algorithm is going to do it for you.
Well, Evan, thank you so much. Listen, I as you were talking about, where social media unfortunately is incentivizing behavior, I just feel this in my tummy. That's the last thing we need is more contention and more polarization. But well, here we are. So, well, Evan, you're one of the good guys. So share with us a little bit about what you do with Regenesis.io.
We are a go-to-market system for brands, and we essentially help brands turn LinkedIn into their number one go-to-market engine. And we do that through a number of unique tools that we have, things that can't be found in marketing agencies. And we do that a lot through business intelligence, understanding the data, deep diving, understanding who's engaging with you. How they match up with your ICP, and then we build lead lists through that. And so we have kind of a very unique system that allows us to not only solve your content distribution, but take all of that great data, and find your customers with it.
Yeah. And that is at regenesis.io. I see some really cool tools that you've got on your website. So, to our friend that's listening, please check out the work that Evan and his team are doing at regenesis.io. Evan, it's been a great thank you so much for your one big idea. I think sage advice that you've given. So, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh. Thank you so much.
With our next one big idea, David Safir. David, you are the founder of Cash Is Clear. You're found on the web at cashisclear.com. David, thank you so much for joining us. Please share your one big idea.
Josh, here's something that's going to bother you once you hear about it. When a business is bleeding cash, most financial professionals do one of three things. They cut expenses, or they go chase the receivable, the money that's owed, or they try to get a line of credit. It's not a diagnosis. They're just guessing, basically, of what to do, and it's leaving money on the table for those clients, and it's killing them slowly.
Wow.
The big idea is this: cash flow problems can be diagnosed the same way a doctor diagnoses a patient. Not with a gut feeling, and not with the same three tried and tired mechanisms, but with systematic and differentiated diagnosis, you can match symptoms and a specific situation with remedies for that situation. And you can also treat not just the pain, like here's a pill, good luck with your broken arm, come back tomorrow, we'll give you another pill, but the actual root cause. You set the arm and it's fixed. That's what we're talking about, not symptoms. So I built a diagnosis system for cash flow. It's called the Cash is Clear Maximizer, and it's a diagnostic tool. That's the idea that you go in and financial professionals, accountants, fractional CFOs, bookkeepers, financial planners, those types of people who are working with clients who have cash flow issues, and you can give them real answers, not just another report. So here's what's going on. Most financial professionals are trained on GAAP accounting, generally acceptable accounting principles, and it tells where the numbers were yesterday. That is history. It doesn't tell you how to fix anything. And it's two completely different skills. So you've got a brilliant accountant sitting across from a business owner who says, I'm profitable on paper, but I don't have any cash in the bank. And the accountant doesn't know how to respond, let alone solve the problem. But it's obvious something's wrong. They don't have a structured way. Now, this is the accountant, financial professionals. They don't have a structured way to get these strategies out. And if they try to help, they maybe have 10 to 20 strategies. You go out and look for articles, it's rotating the same 20 strategies over and over and over again. Except for the one that's the magic bullet, which is the person who wrote the article and buy my product, you'll fix everything.
Of course.
Right. So it's without a system, they're just guessing. So that's where this idea is to have the Cash is Clear Maximizer solves it. I've got over 230 strategies today across 11 different financial categories inside the business. It's not just accounting. Accounts receivables, accounts payables, marketing, human resources, you name it, that you can fix it from a cash flow perspective. So you can tell the situation by using filters. You know, what industry, what's the symptoms, how fast you need results today because your cash shortages, or do you want long-term benefit because you got excess cash? These are the strategies you'll never find in a textbook. They're not written down. This is from the School of Hard Knocks, an experience that I've been able to document. This is meant to challenge conventional financial advice on purpose because so much of it is counterintuitive. So, if there's financial professionals that are serving multiple clients, this is a way to stop reinventing the wheel and actually start making a difference. And show up with a diagnostic framework that makes accounting professionals indispensable because they're helping grow and provide profitability to the company. You don't just report, you fix. That's the Cash is Clear Maximizer. That's the one tool, and it's over a couple hundred strategies. That's for the people who say, where did all my cash go?
Hey, now, all right, now, David, if we had more time, would you mind? I want to make a couple, if I could, if I make one tweak here, and I'd love to record it again, if that would be okay.
Yeah,
Yeah.
sure.
Okay.
Okay.
So, I feel like there was a little bit of this still, like it's all behind the curtain, only if you act. Not you weren't saying these words, but I
Okay.
felt like the solution was something that was only. Something like it wasn't actionable. So it just a subtle couple of subtle tweaks. It really, really simple.
I have a completely separate call to action that I stopped. I thought you were going to
Yeah,
ask me about
no. And
it.
it's not the call to
Okay.
action. What I'm hoping
Okay.
for is I don't want, so you introduce the problem and then you introduce the solution as your solution. And
Okay.
so that then feels like, okay, well, there's nothing I could do other than listen for the pitch. Does that make sense? So
Yeah.
here, really simple fix. So all you simply have to do is let me give you, okay, these are very common ways that people address it. Now, the reality is there are actually over 100 possible solutions that one could employ. Let me give you three. And in fact, to our friend that's listening right now, whether you're a financial professional or you're not, if you're a business founder, Let me give you three things you might consider looking at. Now, I don't have time to get into all these three things, but I feel like if you just gave them a little bit of a taste, I think that that would relieve that pressure of, yeah, does that make sense?
Yes,
Okay,
I've got
cool.
to write it down though, because my mind goes blank when I try to come up with three that are unusual. So let me just, okay. So let me just,
And
here's
by the way,
three.
if you want to say that in the form of a story, that would be even better. So you say, for example, one of our financial professionals was working with a trucking company. And so, if you're a good doctor, doctors don't assume there are only one of three possible things that could be wrong with you. There are an infinite number of things that could potentially be wrong. And so you diagnose, you diagnose, you diagnose. Well, in this case, they diagnosed and found that the actual best solution. And so sometimes, so I guess my, so if you could, you almost want to say, whether you're a founder or you're a financial professional, please don't feel that it's either, cut money or get more sales. Like it may very well be, but, there are other things, for example, this is an easy one. It's like taking a look at your subscriptions, right? Your SaaS products, and are you sure you're in the right? That's an easy one. I don't know. I'm just like, whatever. The more creative, the better. And if you got a story around it, that's even better. Is that cool?
Yes.
Okay, good, 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 good.
All right. And I just
It's tough
found,
because
I just, while you were
I just have to.
talking, I wrote down the three. So that's
Oh,
great.
okay, brilliant, brilliant,
All
brilliant. Okay,
right.
cool. So let me do a quick introduction.
But
We'll
let me
just,
ask you one more question. How did I run from a time perspective?
I gotta do the timer. So,
Yeah, and I
just
forgot to set my timer also. So
no,
when,
that's all right. Then let me worry
yeah.
about it. Let me worry
Okay.
about it, and then I will just if you see activity in the chat window, I'll try to do it at 30 seconds, okay?
Okay,
And
and you gave
then
me 20, and did I go 20 longer?
I'm gonna do
Okay.
30 and then 10
All
seconds.
right.
So,
Okay,
okay.
sounds good. All
All right,
right.
here we go. Let's do it again.
Sounds
Sorry.
good.
I'm kind of new at this too, so we're gonna again, it's kind of a unique format that I'm just trying to get everyone
Yeah.
to contort themselves to as opposed to a conventional podcast. But like I said, the feedback has been really good. So, okay, here
Good.
we go.
All right. Sounds great.
With our next one big idea, it's David Safir. David, you are the founder of Cash Is Clear. You are found on the web at cashisclear.com. David Safir, thank you so much for joining us. Let's hear your one big idea.
Josh, thanks for having me here today. And this is going to bother you once I give you this concept. When a business is bleeding cash, most financial professionals, they do one of three things. They cut expenses, or they chase money that's owed, or they try to get a line of credit, which, by the way, is probably too late because the credit's shot by that point, becomes an emergency. And they're not trying to diagnose and figure out what the root causes are. They're just guessing. And it is slowly killing small businesses around the globe. The big idea is this: cash flow problems can be diagnosed the exact same way a doctor diagnoses a patient. They don't just say, "Oh, you're in pain, take some painkiller." They go and try to find the root of that pain. And it's not a gut feeling. They have been doing remedies of all different types because they learned about it. It's systematic. It's diagnostic. We don't hear the checklist going off in their head, but you know it's happening, and they're trying to hone in on your exact situation. That's what I built, but for cash flow. It's called the Cash Clear Maximizer, and it is a diagnostic tool that is based on identifying your client's situation. And with this tool, financial professionals or even business owners who want to dig into it can say, "This is what the situation is. How do I get help? What are the tools at my disposal?" Why is there such a big difference between what the financial professionals can do and what they need to do for their clients? It's because of gap accounting, this accounting system we've got that is sort of theoretical and just doesn't show you reality. Reality is your bank account ba bank account. But the other key thing, they are taught how to record history, not how to fix and impact the future. Two different skills. You got brilliant accountants sitting across from a client who says, "Hey, I'm not profitable," or "I am profitable, that's the problem, but I don't see cash in my bank account." So there's
Yeah.
obviously something wrong. They're not given a structured way to fix anything. And they usually have 10 to 20 strategies to pick from because that's what they read. Without a system, it's just a guess. And that's where the CashFlow Clear Maximizer fixes it or can help because I've identified to date 230 plus strategies and growing. And a lot of them are not the typical ones you're thinking about. For example, I had a client who was buying their nuts and bolts at a retail hardware store. And I said, "Why don't you look at a distributor?" We found a specialty distributor, $1.2 million client. We saved $96,000 a year on nuts and bolts. Here's another one. Fire your unprofitable clients. Not all clients are good clients. And you could have the clients that are sucking you dry, either because literally they are negative margin or because they're taking up too much time. Quick third one, figure out a subscription model. Almost, I challenge anybody listening to figure out a subscription model for recurring revenue for your business. That's an awesome long-term cash flow strategy. So these are strategies you will not find in a textbook. If you're a financial professional, go out. I challenge you to identify all the strategies you can and just systematize them. And that way, or you're a business professional, you're a business owner, do the same thing. Create a list and move forward.
I love it. David, your website is cashisclear.com. And what I like about you is you have a lot of great resources. Do you mind sharing for folks listening? I think you've stimulated some ideas. And I love the analogy. It's kind of a medical diagnosis. And you're right. I think it's so easy for those of us to just lump it into three possible ways that we can fix a cash flow problem when, in fact, when you have a very creative mind that can explore all of that, that would be incredibly valuable. So I understand why your solution is pretty valuable. When folks go to cashisclear.com, what do you recommend they do?
Well, they can do one of two things. Either download an ebook and it'll give you 24 strategies and it'll spell them out in a lot of detail, or go to the website and click on on the Maximizer button, and you'll be able to sign up for a free trial period and you can use it yourself and explore it and figure out what it looks like. And it's for free, and you can glean as much information off of it as you want to during a trial period.
I appreciate that. Is this just for people that are doing the books, or who is this appropriate for?
It's appropriate for accountants, fractional CFOs, the people who support small businesses in a financial perspective. I've got an inventory specialist in my program. However, a business owner could use it, but here's a warning. Most business owners of this level, from zero to $20 million, they are not financial professionals and they might not be able to pick up everything. They're good at what they do. That's how they built this business. So that's why I gear it more towards financial professionals.
I love it. David Safir, your website, cashisclear.com. Thank you so much, David, for your one big idea.
Thank you.
With our next big idea, we've got Ryan Vett. Ryan, you're a USA Today best-selling author, and you are a keynote speaker. And Ryan, you are found on the web at ryanvett.com. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. We would absolutely love to hear your one big idea.
Josh, thanks so much for having me. I think it started many, many years ago when I was back in the venture capital space, and audience asked me to speak on why millennials weren't buying houses. At the time, it was 2009. Economy wasn't fantastic, and so there was a lot of reasons that millennials weren't buying houses, including the fact that many of them were too young. So I started to analyze and look at the different generations, and what I found was what I call the generational pendulum. And that's going to be the one big idea that I want to share, because I think this unlocks quite a lot about how teams respond in your workplace today, how your clients and customers respond, and what you do with it. So and what's so profound about it is I've often had people in my audiences, and one in particular started sobbing, and she came up to me afterwards, and I was like, this is not an emotional story. This is some science-backed psychology and anthropology and sociology. And she said, now I finally understand why my daughter keeps getting in fights with me and why I can't communicate well with my mother. And that's really what I want to help you kind of process today. So the generational pendulum is like this. It looks at four phases in every generation. First, we experience something. We do that in the human world too. Consider a teenager. They experience their parents saying, clean the room. And then they challenge it, and that's natural. So they challenge, they push back against it. And then at some point, when that pendulum swings, we overcorrect. We're going to go so far the opposite direction. And then finally, we'll recalibrate. So the four phases are experience, challenge, overcorrect, and recalibrate. So let's look at how that plays out. If you go back to the Silent Generation, they grew up as kids of the Great Depression era. They didn't have a lot of money. Their parents were telling them to save their Ziploc bags, refold their tinfoil. If they opened a gift, they could not rip the wrapping paper because it'd be used again. And their kids were baby boomers. And they saw that growing up. And the boomer said, I don't want anything to do with that. And so the baby boomers, they wanted a life of abundance for their kids. So they went in for the first time in American history. You have two parents, both working jobs. They're often not at home because they wanted to give their kids what they didn't have. That meant money, brands, resources, two-car garage houses, and just all of these things. Well, that bore the next generation. So their experience was Gen X and the latchkey kids. They came home to an empty house. They came home to, watch their one TV show on the three channels that they had on the family TV in the living room. And then after they did their homework, they went out and played till the streetlights came on, often without any parental supervision. The parents didn't come to games and all of that. And so Gen X, you have this latchkey kid that, again, is going to overcorrect the next generation, and they have millennials. Now, millennials, their parents, Gen X, became the helicopter parents. They said, hey, since our parents were absent, we're going to be hyper present with this next generation. We're going to program them. And the average millennial worked between 44 and 50 hours a week as a kid, as a fifth grader, because of their extracurriculars, their ballet, their soccer, their community activities. And so you see this pendulum swing back and forth. And now we have Gen Z in the workplace that is mostly later born Gen X and early born millennial parents that are saying, hey, no, we need more family time. We need this work-life balance back. But we're also going to give you freedom and autonomy to do what you want. So we're not smothering you like the helicopter parents. And so the generational pendulum works in so many different facets of life, not just in parenting, but that's probably one of the most concrete, easily understandable examples. And when you zoom out and you start to understand how this applies to business, how it applies to employees, what employees expect, you start to be able to see this pendulum swing back and forth. And you can actually lead better if you understand how the framework works and how you can apply that to your teams.
Wow, Ryan. Well, I feel like we're just kind of scratching the surface here. Once we understand, generationally, what we see, and I suspect you've got some great resources on this. You've got a fantastic and popular YouTube channel. Your website, Ryan, is ryanvet.com. To our friend that's been listening to our conversation here and listening to your one big idea, and they want more, what would you recommend they do?
Yeah, I would say you can head to my website, ryanvet.com. That's ryanvet.com/collide. And I've got a free newsletter there that you can join. And every single week, I publish an essay that has this research on there. And it's geared towards leaders who are leading teams and trying to figure out how to manage the current generations in the workplace and what that means for our future. And we look at it from a futurist lens, saying, hey, if this is where we are today, where are we going to be? And how do you make sure your business is future-proof and ready for that? Totally free resource, and I encourage you to check it out.
I love it. Ryan Vet, you're found on the web at ryanvet.com. Thank you so much, Ryan, for sharing your one big idea.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks for listening to The Thoughtful Entrepreneur. If your goal is to grow your business, increase revenue, and build authority without gimmicks, this show is designed for you. Each episode gives you practical insight from leaders who have turned trust and credibility into real business results. If you value short, thoughtful conversations that respect your time, make sure you're subscribed. We publish daily 15-minute episodes focused on growth that actually compounds. And if you're interested in being a guest or you want to turn podcast appearances into measurable business growth, visit podverified.com. You can start for free with your Pod Verified score, along with free podcast guest training and a free media kit builder. These tools are built to help you get booked on better shows, deliver stronger interviews, and convert audience trust into revenue. No more desperate sales. You truly can enjoy all the business you like by generously sharing your wisdom. Everything we offer is built by podcasters for guests with a focus on trust, organic growth, and long-term business success. Thanks again for spending your time with us. I'll see you next time.